This is Pirate RC, and I'm out here in West Virginia having a chat with Dave Arnold, one of the founders of Classic River Runners, and a few of his guides. All right, Dave, so you are one of the owners of Class 6 out here in West Virginia.
Yep.
And how long have you guys had this company?
We started in 1977, planning the company. Ran our first trip on March 15, 1978. So this is our 30th year.
Oh, wow. Great. And you guys are definitely considered one of the top, if not the top, in this area on the New River for rafting, right?
Yeah, at the expense of sounding, you know, a little...
Right.
You know, pat myself on the back. I would think most people would say we set a standard.
Yeah, and I had a chance to go rafting earlier this week, and I have to say it was cool to see that you guys had all your own boats, all your own buses. Is that kind of part of your business model, I guess, and the way you've decided to run things overall?
Well, there's a lot of things in our business model. One of the things is that we've stood in front of our staff many times and said, if you need something, we will get it for you. Now, you know, there's got to be a limit to that, of course.
Sure.
But if we worked for companies before where financial restrictions sometimes said the tools aren't available, and obviously financial things have to pull your reins back a little bit, but pretty much so, if anybody really needs a new piece of equipment, whether it's a bus, a truck, a raft, we have always prioritized that, and we've told our staff it's our problem as owners to figure out how to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll get it. If it's important, we'll make it happen. And I think we've held that commitment for 30 years pretty well.
Yeah, I talked to some of the guides just about their experiences, and a lot of them said that they came to work specifically at your company. Have you noticed you've retained people over the years?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We give jackets away for 20 years of service, and we probably have 40 staff that have been with us more than 20 years. So for a 30-year company, that says a lot.
It
especially
does.
Considering the first year, there were only like 10 employees. So, you know, it's changed.
I'm Guido. Been out here 18 years.
Tim Fitzpatrick. You call me Fitz. I'm here with Pirate Guido.
Nice. So Guido, you said you're from Michigan, right?
Yep.
Originally?
Been down here 18 years. Came down on vacation for the weekend and got back to Michigan, got laid off the factory work I was working in. House got broke into the next day after, and packed everything up and split like the day after that. So 4 days later, moved back.
Down
awesome.
To here.
Awesome. Best wow. thing I ever did.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's great. What about you, Fitz? How'd you come to be over here?
Well, I'm from just south of Guido, Toledo, Ohio. And 1980 was a good college job to have. And then it was, next thing you know, it was 88. I was out in Colorado for a while, and I just like this kind of work, recreation specialist. That's kind of what I
leisure look at radicals.
And so I worked up in D.C. actually, and then would come down here on weekends. I went to Colorado for the last 15 years and just came back this summer to, well, gully season's coming up.
That's the time to be here.
Yeah.
All right, so and for people who don't know, what does gully season mean out here?
We run two rivers out here commercially, the New River and the Gauley River. And the Gauley is one of the top in the world for whitewater. It's dam release, so we run it for 22 days in the fall. And it is, anybody knows anything about whitewater, for 22 days, Friday through Monday, so it's actually 5.5 weekends. It is awesome.
See, where we are here is the New River, sitting on the New River Gorge Bridge. The Gauley is about 20 miles north, and the New and the Gauley meet. So they let that water out from the summer pool lake and guarantee us like 6 to 7 weekends.
Wow.
And so we can actually, you know, advance book, and we always book totally. And yeah. Upper Gauley is one of the best commercially run rivers in probably the world.
Yeah.
So as far as the rafting, this is called Class 6, the company, but...
Correct.
Are we going to be on Class 6?
No, you'll be up going up to Class 5 Rapids. Rapids are class from 1 to 6. Class 6 is a great name for a company.
Because of our customer service. We're the high end of customer service.
That's right.
It's Class 6.
It's Classy 6.
So Classy 6.
You won't find probably anywhere in the world a commercially run Class 6 mm-hmm. rapid or stretch of water. Just liability's too high.
We have a river just on the way up to the gully that goes into the gully right above Lost Paddle. And there is a Class 6 rapid there,
yeah.
And that stretch from the bridge down. And that
right.
is hardly ever run, and it Yeah. It's a full-on classic trap, and it's called Coming Home Sweet Jesus. So that's one of our, people says, what is a classic? And I kind of tell them about that one, and Niagara Falls would be a classic, you know.
For you, what's been your most exciting trip? Was it that first trip you took, or?
Every trip I'm on is the best day to be on the river. It's incredible, and it's hard to have a bad day.
So this is like the ideal job, this office right
for
here.
For me.
Best office. Yeah.
It might not be for everybody, but it definitely works for me.
Yeah.
Hear those cicadas?
Yeah.
In our office.
That's right. Change wallpaper in the fall.
And, add some color.
Yeah, outdoors.
So who do you take out on the river? You have some families, some people just out for adventure.
Everybody. We've got some stretch of river that's great for everybody.
So when you look at class 1 through 6, 1 is pretty steady water.
Yeah, rapids are class 1 is pretty wide open, nothing to have to worry about, just you know, fast moving water, or moving water for that matter. Mm-hmm. If you flush your toilet, it's class 1. Class 2 is typically a little bigger water, still nothing really to worry about. 3 can be big water. There's class 3 rapid out here that will flip boats at the right levels, but for the most part safe. Then you start getting into 4s, and there's an obstruction in the river, typically rocks, that you actually have to make a move around. Yeah, rapids aren't classed on how big the water is. It's what you have to do to get through it and your danger factor. You know, what's your chance of injury or worse if someone falls out? But we try to avoid that.
Yeah.
As best as possible. You know, I can't guarantee you're going to stay in that boat today.
Right, yeah. I've heard. Do you have some customers that you've known for about the whole time?
There's a bunch of us that work a lot on request trips. People who've taken before, and a lot of them now. I mean, it's like taking friends, not just guests. You know, you've known them for a while. It's great to see them every year, every twice a year.
When you raft in the cold water, is that a lot different of an experience, or is it?
It's come Gauley season. The Gauley River releases from Somersville Lake behind a dam. Mm-hmm. It's coming out of the bottom of Somersville Lake. So right now it's running about 54 degree water. It is colder, which still compared to snow melt out west, I mean, it's cold for us, but the guys that come in from out west, they're like, it's not bad at all. But you just dress for it. We rent wetsuits to the guests. All of us guys have different clothing to dress. Every once in a while we will get a day of full snow, which is just brutal cold, but kind of deal with it. And
So for your guests, what's a typical day?
I show up at class 6. We've got coffee and everything for you here, breakfast if you want. Check in with your trip leader, sign in, let them know you're here. Once you get your life jackets and helmets, they hop on the bus. And on the way to the river, the trip leaders will give a safety orientation speech, what to do, what not to do. Typically about 5 hours on the water, depending on water levels and what goes on. Lunch on the shore midway in there somewhere, which is great. A lot of our trips, most of them are videoed, all the major rapids. Okay. So once we get back here and let people shower up and change, we all meet up in the pub and grab a beer and watch a video. Nice. Laugh, see who was paddling, who wasn't. It's great. Yeah.
What distance are you going in that 5 hours? How far are you?
Depends on what stretch we're doing. 13, 14 to... 17 miles, depending. We've got so many different stretches of river. And it depends also on the water levels of how fast that's going to go. We've got a couple different put-ins. So just so many different variables out here. You know, and that's kind of what we try to tell people in our safety speeches, too. You know, we are guides, not gods.
Yeah.
You know, we can tell you how to sit in a boat and how to paddle and stay away from the rocks and this and that, but there's a lot of different variables. Mm-hmm.
In your practices, considering that the environment around here, some of it's protected, but a lot of it's important to West Virginians in general, what do you do as a business to kind of control any of the negative effects a business might have on the environment?
Well, the first thing you have to believe is that preservation of green space is something that drives economic development. And that basic concept is one of the things that happened here, and we were involved in those, especially the Gauley River. Quite frankly, I'm not sure the Gauley River would have happened had it not been for some of the people involved here at Class 6 and some other people. So the preservation of, in this case, we're sitting here right now looking at 70,000 acres of the New River Gorge National River. The boundary is, I could hit it with a rock from where we're sitting. if you believe that preservation of green space has an economic return, then it makes sense. I'll give you an example. When you put large tracts of land in the federal government, the tax base for the community goes down substantially. They do pay a tax, a real estate tax, but it's very, very small. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to put 70,000 acres in green that is going to be a low tax base, then you're going to hurt the schools. And quite frankly, that's why certain people were against the Gauley becoming a park. Well, on the other side of that, if that green space allows economic development to happen, like what we're doing right here, sitting at a major outfitter with a credible music venue about to happen, mm-hmm. you know, now it starts to make sense. You lose a little there, you gain a little here. So that's probably the biggest premise. You know, we follow all kinds of things in our design, a lot of lead principles. You're sitting right here right now, and it's a sunny, hot day, but we're underneath the shade. That does not happen by accident. To build this deck that we're sitting on, which has trees all around it, complete canopy above us, and little spots of sun, but almost 100% shade. Classic real estate development says you bring a bulldozer in, you flatten it, you build your building, you pay a lot of money for landscaping, you get all kinds of little shrubs from China that are, you know, all around your house, and that's way most of the development's done in America. In this case, despite most of our bulldozers here are coal operators, so they kind of freak out when we, you know, pull their reins real hard, but if you don't destroy all these trees, then you end up with a deck that's covered with shade and a canopy, and now you don't need air conditioning. You know, so there's a carbon, I wouldn't say it's carbon neutral, but you now start to affect, there's no air conditioning on this property.
Yeah.
I mean, other than our office. So now we're right on the edge of the New River Gorge. And on the other hand, people are coming to see the New River Gorge. So what you do is you cut windows and we can see a little bit of the river at various places, but these are not, you know, big, wide open. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because a lot of people come here and they don't understand. They say, you know, hey, you have this beautiful place and you're right on the river, but I can't see the river. I say, well, yeah, you can. Just walk over there and look. Well,
yeah.
They're so used to that kind of development that you and I were talking about where you just bulldoze the whole place and
yeah.
plant your little shrubs from China. And, you know, it's a different way of looking at things. But once people spend time here, they start to understand that it's what you're really doing is sculpturing the woods to give you little bits of light, little bits of shade, little bits of viewshed. It's really art is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But it starts with understanding the concept.
One thing I noticed too on the rafting trip was that all the guides were very serious about trash, and you guys made sure you had receptacles everywhere. On the ground you have receptacles everywhere, and you have recycling.
Right.
When did you start your recycling program?
We've always had a recycling program to some extent. We're obviously limited to... You know, for example, we still have problems with some of our plastic. But, no, we've always had a recycling program here. If you're going to really affect recycling in rural America like we are here, especially in Appalachia, though, it has to start with the school systems. My wife's a teacher, and they just started a huge recycling program in all the schools here in the county, which is just so subtle but so strong.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going to change.
It's laying the groundwork.
Absolutely.
For kids, and I think.
Speaking of laying the groundwork, I always laugh because our guides always say, you know, if you want to smoke cigarettes, field dress the cigarette, throw it away, take the filter, and if you don't want to stick it in your own pocket or your own sock, we'll be glad to stick it in your sock or your pocket. So, you know, I see people looking like, are they for real? But anyway, just the mere fact that we have people... You know, the cigarette, the tobacco really breaks down pretty quick, but some of the filters, especially these plastic filters, they're around for eons.
Yeah.
So we have all these, I'm always coming home. I'm a non-smoker, and I'm always coming home with cigarette butts in my pocket all the time. Now, I don't stick them in my socks because I'm usually barefoot, but there's been 500,000 people who've gone down the river here that have been told to, if they smoke, put their cigarette butt in their socks. And, you know, I think that alone's affected some people.
Yeah, it's kind of a shove it kind of thing, but
yeah,
into your socks.
Yeah. And it's said with fun, and, you know, it's not, you know, people laugh, so it's not like we're being mean to people or something. We're just very subtly making a point.
Yeah.
And people get it.
I was looking too, you have some pretty new cabins that you've built, and you did something interesting with the sewage.
Well, again, the cabins are something that most people, again, don't understand what's going on until you explain it to them. What we wanted to do when the cabins were completed, which if you go down there, I think you'll agree we accomplished it. They're only a year old, and they sort of look like they were just dropped in there.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the trees are mature all around them. They're canopy of the forest. This is a hardwood forest, mostly oak. And that, those oak trees are very, very susceptible to pressure on the roots. So you have to be really careful. So we drop that thing in, and it you feel like it's a little house in the woods, sort of like maybe what you thought about when you read nursery rhymes as a kid.
Yeah.
Now, most rural places in America have a big green yard in front of them, and even though a lot of Americans love grass, there's a lot of frustrated golfers out there. Most of the reasons rural America has big grass places is because they need leech lines. We actually suffer from that somewhat here at Class 6. So if you have to do a big leech line, which for somebody that maybe doesn't know what that is, once your effluent is held and you start pumping it out, you have to have these long lines of gravel or sand pits where the effluent leaches out, and then the bacteria takes apart the poop and, you know, disperses. Well, in our case, we didn't want grass. So we did the first project ever approved in West Virginia where we used a system out of Oregon called an Orenco system. It cost us about three times as much as it would for a normal septic system. But what it is we collect the poop and, you know, in septic systems around the cabins, but then instead of dispersing it through these big long leach lines where there's grass, we run it down to it's called an Orenco system, and it's a series. The best way I could describe it would be if you imagined a large pole with a blanket draped over it, and there's a series of these blankets, one after the other, after the other, after the other, and they're very tight, and they produce a really rich environment for a certain bacteria that loves to eat effluent. So there's a system of pumps that just constantly wash it down, and it goes down these big sheets, which basically is just a surface area equation. It's just making a lot of surface area. And when it is finished, it's all done through telemetry, and there's actually a telephone that sends it to Oregon, and they can monitor what's going on. But anyway, long story short, when it comes out, they say you can drink it. Now, I'm not going to do that, but
yeah.
I've looked at it and thought about it, and I've smelled it. And, you know, it smells pretty good, but I have my limits.
Bottle it.
Yeah, we all have our limits.
Class
yeah.
six.
Yeah. No.
Class six bottle water.
Yeah.
Special. No.
He's not going to go into
yeah.
that.
Vintage.
Yeah, the special vintage, yeah. Yeah, we could have different bottles from different years. But the bottom line is it does a really good job, and they've had this process in our neighboring state of Virginia, and we had the first one here in West Virginia. Another thing kind of cool about it is we have some power lines that go through our property, and power lines are a problem. You know, if you have a bunch of land, you have a big power line through it, they're ugly, they're not much you can do underneath them, but we put ours underneath a power line. So, you know, here was a space that we weren't going to build a cabin.
Right.
There's all kinds of issues with building homes and things underneath high power lines. Mm-hmm. So people think you get the all kinds of things from power lines, and, you know, it's a great place to put poop.
Cool.
Yeah, even though I wouldn't say that green has been the absolute driving force here, it has been a part of everything we've done.
Yeah, which is great. And I think just the small steps that people can take. And like you said, even teaching kids to start recycling. And maybe their parents never will, but if the kids do.
Yeah. And quite frankly, I think it's wrong to force some green initiatives if people can't afford it. Because that just makes people buck, you know, their heads and say, you know. You have to really put green initiatives, especially in rural Appalachia, but mm-hmm. that's true in many places in America. You just have to be really careful how you push that on people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a reasonability that you have to consider.
And
whether works for people.
Yeah, and whether you like it or not, the economic side of it is a reality to some people and to some places. And you just have to take that in consideration.
Why are you hosting Mountain Stage?
Well, we're hosting Mountain Stage for a lot of reasons. One, this is the stock answer, is that it's our 30th year. And we always try to, on a significant anniversary, celebrate in some way.
Mm-hmm.
On a maybe another level, Mountain Stage, we think, represents West Virginia very well. Everything I do, I tell our staff all the time, you represent West Virginia. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have somebody in the boat, you represent Class 6, of course.
Yeah.
You represent a lot of things, but you represent West Virginia. We are constantly trying to change the image a little bit of West Virginia. There's media and certain things have, I think, given West Virginia a bad rap. In rafting, it's kind of funny. People all the time say, you know, hey, I saw Deliverance. I was like, well, that was filmed in Georgia. But, you know, everybody, if you've seen Deliverance, some of those themes, people sort of think that applies to Appalachia in general. Mountain Stage is an amazing venue that really, I think, sends a message about all the strengths of West Virginia versus the weaknesses, and it's what we try to do here at Class 6 every day. So there's some simpatico there.
Great. Can you just tell me a little bit about how you came to West Virginia and stayed?
Okay. Well, first off, the word from, people always ask me where I'm from, which I know I sound like a politician when I say, how do you define from? But I define from as where I went to high school. And I went to high school in a small suburb in Cincinnati. I also spent a large amount of time on a farm that was in my family, which, interesting enough, the large park there is called the Edge of Appalachia. The Appalachia is a geographic boundary set up by Congress, and my family's farm is on the western edge of that boundary.
Okay.
Brown County, Ohio, is on the edge of Appalachia, and they have a big property there. So I've always thought I had sort of like 1 foot in Appalachia and 1 foot out. The way we got here, all of us, the 1 foot in was mainly because of either, in my case, my farm, but also because of kayaking. All of us were kayakers. Jeff and I, my partner and I, when we were 16, this is amazing, my mom let me do this, but we did a 550-mile river trip.
Oh, wow.
28 days on the water. Interesting enough, three people from that trip are now outfitters, 3 out of 15.
Huh.
So you talk about affecting kids' lives. The gentleman who put that together was a guy named Bob Morgan, and, you know, clearly that one trip completely changed 40, 50 years of behavior in three individuals, which I'm one of them.
Yeah.
So that's a really neat thing. So basically, because of that trip, we learned something about running rivers, and that led to kayaking. Kayaking led to learning to kayak. Kayaking led to teaching kayaking. Teaching kayak led to guiding. Guiding led to owning. So it was that simple. And here we are at 53 trying to figure out what the next step is.